From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A mounting chorus this week of voices saying economic recovery is at long last beginning in earnest. Indicators are up on key fronts. President Bush says, hold on to your hat, here it comes. So why isn't everybody happy? Tonight on Point, looking under the hood of economic recovery, looking down the road at America's economic future. We begin with a quick look at the numbers. Economic recovery is making front page news, but not everyone feels it yet. Earlier, I spoke with Aaron Task, senior writer at thestreet.com in San Francisco. I asked him if the economy really is turning up.
It seems that we are in the midst of a recovery. The issue or the concern is that to this point, it's been a jobless recovery. Most of the economic numbers have been turning up except for employment, and that's obviously a big concern.
We'll turn to the jobless piece, but give us the proof of the pudding along the rest of the waterfront here. What points to recovery?
The second quarter, the economy grew by 2.4%, which was stronger than most economists expected, and particularly strong given that we were still in a hot war, quote-unquote, in Iraq through part of that period. In July, retail sales rose 1.4%, and industrial production was up pretty sharply in July as well. And we also still have strength in housing, although that is a question going forward because of the recent rise in rates. But putting it all together, it's a pretty decent picture of growth, and the expectation now is that that momentum is going to carry forward.
This has been an unusual recovery in many ways, a slow one to get going. Are the numbers strong enough that economists are believing that it's going to go the distance this time?
I think more economists are starting to believe it, in part because the Federal Reserve has pretty much said they're going to keep rates low for an extended period of time in the hopes of spurring the recovery further. And the Bush administration has given us a lot of tax relief, which folks on Wall Street think is going to generate more economic growth. All this remains to be seen, but I think there definitely is a sense among economists and folks of that ilk that the economy is picking up steam, yes.
When would or when have the stimulus effects kicked in? Are they already evident, or is that yet to come, of tax relief, for example?
Personally, we just received our $400 child tax credit rebate just last week, so I think it's happening now, and we should start to see whether that's going to have an effect in the numbers that will come in September and maybe in October as well. In terms of retail sales, you also have the back-to-school shopping, and it'll be closely watched to see how much spending actually occurs.
We heard a lot about businesses not spending, that business spending was not driving the economy. Consumers were carrying everything. Has that begun to change?
That's still a sticking point, and I'm glad you brought that up, is that ties into employment. And ultimately, we will need more spending from businesses for the economy to really grow strongly. And to this point, there's scant evidence that that's happening.
Why?
I think the biggest reason is that businesses spent so much money during the late 1990s, during the big tech boom and the internet boom, and they spent a lot of money on things that didn't prove to be very profitable. So now they're very wary about spending and being burned again. And there's also some sense that because of all the corporate scandals and accounting concerns, that a lot of CEOs are much more concerned these days about making sure that they're following the letter of the law when it comes to accounting, as opposed to thinking about how can I make my business grow.
Are these same dynamics behind the joblessness of this recovery, as you described it?
It's a big part of it. Obviously, confidence among business leaders is going to ultimately be a big part of whether or not they're hiring more people. I think right now, businesses have stopped shrinking. The pace of the layoffs has slowed, but we haven't gotten to the point where they're feeling that their businesses are strong enough where they can afford to hire more people. So we're in a bit of a lull on that point right now, and the question is, will the momentum of the economy be strong enough to pull the business confidence up enough?
So, Aaron, you watch this every day. Where do we stand now? Does this mean that the boom excesses of the 90s have been wrung out of the system? Does it mean that the U.S. economy is back in an old-time, good-times upcycle?
I wouldn't go that far. I think we are still very much living with the post-bubble hangover. And I think it's going to stay with us for an extended period of time because it was really so huge and we were all caught up in it. And we're still going to pay the price for it on some level for an extended period of time. I don't think we're going back to 5% unemployment anytime soon. And I think a problem is that our expectations got raised so high during the late 1990s that what is actually a pretty decent economy today, and from a historical perspective, feels kind of shaky because things were so great from, say, 1995 to 2000.
But you're suggesting we can have a hangover and a recovery at the same time.
Exactly. I think we could have steady, modest growth in the 3 to 3.5% range that is actually pretty decent for a mature economy like that we have in the United States, but again, isn't going to feel so great because of the boom period we just went through.
And when do we know whether this has actually clicked in? If it's not going to feel as fizzy and marvelous as the 90s, and yet people still feel skeptical about the idea of a recovery, what will be the indicators that absolutely confirm this is here, we're in the midst of it, the economy's recovered?
Right. I don't know if there's going to be any indicator that's going to absolutely confirm it. I think we definitely keep an eye on unemployment, which has started to trend down a little bit, getting closer to 6%. I think the stock market is a good barometer of where the economy is headed, and as long as it remains in a generally upward moving path, I think that that's a good sign as well. You know, I keep a close eye on interest rates as well, because the bond market has started to become unraveled a little bit, and that could definitely hurt the economy going forward. There's a lot of moving parts, obviously, and some of it is psychological, and it's very hard to measure.
Well, a hangover and recovery at the same time, we may not have done that before. We'll keep track on how it feels.
It's going to be a unique experience, that's for sure.
Aaron Task, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Aaron Task is a senior writer at TheStreet.com. He spoke with us from San Francisco. The recession ended almost 2 years ago, and it's been a slow climb out. Economists debate the best way to perk up an economy. Now that the U.S. economy appears to be on a path to recovery, some wonder if Washington took the right steps to get it there. Bush backers say darn right it did, and the benefits will be long-term. Detractors say the economy got the wrong medicine, and we will all pay a price. Do you feel the economy picking up in your life, your business? Are happy days here again or coming soon? Is the economy now on the right track for the moment, for the long term? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from La Paz, Bolivia, is Robert Barro. He's professor of economics at Harvard University and a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. He's author of the textbook Macroeconomics and of Nothing is Sacred, Economic Ideas for the New Millennium. Robert Barro supports Bush administration economic policy because he believes it will, quote, foster economic expansion similar to those following the Kennedy-Johnson tax cut of 63-64 and the Reagan cuts of the 1980s. Good evening and welcome, Robert Barro.
Hello, good to talk with you.
It's good to have you long distance there from La Paz. And joining us from Berkeley, California tonight is George Akerlof. He is professor of economics at UC Berkeley and winner of the 2001 Nobel Prize for Economics. He has been quoted recently as saying Bush's economic policy, his plan, is the worst policy in the last 200 years, and we're going to pay a price, a serious price, for such irresponsibility. Good evening and welcome, George Akerlof.
Good evening.
Thanks so much for being with us. Robert Barro, let us turn to you first. In La Paz, what's your sense of the, before we look longer term, are we in a recovery now? What's the strength of this recovery? When the adrenaline rush, as the Wall Street Journal puts it, of lower interest rates and big tax cuts ebbs, is this thing have staying power?
I think over the short term, it looks pretty good. I think in the third, fourth quarters and beginning of next year, the likelihood is that economic growth will be pretty strong. I think the policies in place are very helpful in that regard.
And in this recovery, do you see this as the beginning of a period of prospects for healthy, long-term growth? Is this putting the country on a strong, long-term economic footing?
I think the tax cuts are positive. I don't think the long-term economic outlook looks quite as good as it did in the end of the 1990s and 2000, when it looked like the longer-term trend of productivity growth was going to be very positive. I think it's going to look pretty good, but I don't think it's quite back to that kind of an outlook.
George Akerlof, let me turn to you. We've got a rough line in La Paz there. You've been quoted as very critical of Bush economic policy, but give us your short-term prognosis first. Do you agree? Are we in a recovery? Is the recession finally behind us? Is it going to start to feel like a recovery to the average American?
Well, it looks as if we will have some considerable growth in the third and fourth quarters of this year. So I agree with Bob there. I think what people have been worrying about in this recovery is, as was said, that it's a jobless recovery. There are too few jobs, and so productivity growth has been good, but we're worried about jobs. So basically, my view is, yes, we seem to be in a recovery. People seem to think it's a little bit of a weak recovery. So.
And is a weak recovery going to feel like a recovery at all to Americans coming out of the 90s? Is it if it doesn't chip away more strongly at unemployment, is it still going to feel buoyant, like a lift?
I don't know.
That's an economist speaking, saying, what as an economist, you don't know how it's going to feel.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it's going to feel. You know, you talk about a lot of Americans. There are a lot of them. For some people, it will be fine, and for some people, it won't, you know. What fraction of the population is unemployed, you know, 6%. Over 6% in any given time, that means probably about 15% will have some unemployment over the course of the year. You know, people have different experiences, and so how it feels is not a well-defined object.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for the short term, as I see it, things look as if they're going to get better. And so, the real question is whether I think then we should ask the question, which I want to talk about later, which is, did we have the proper means to achieve this recovery? That's one. And then the second is whether the price of that was too much.
Well, let's look at those. The proper means. I guess the big crowbars here were tax cuts and very low interest rates. Classic kind of stimulus activity there. How do you size those up?
Okay, so let me begin to talk about the administration's medicine for this recovery.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I see it, it's as bad a prescription as I have ever seen. What is the problem? The problem is that they've solved a temporary problem with a permanently costly solution. So in order to stimulate the economy today, we've had permanent tax cuts. So what's that like? That's like supposing you have a leaky faucet and you invite the plumber to come to your house to fix it. So then he fixes the faucet. I might add that he fixes the faucet rather badly, but we'll talk about that later.
Mm.
And then what you do is you keep him on the payroll forever. So in my view, that's a very costly way to fix a leaky faucet. So as I see it, let me get to the punchline. The fiscal policy that we have today is going to produce red ink. It's going to produce red ink as far as the eye can see.
George Arkaloff, hold that thought. Robert Barrow, your view. We've got a recovery right now, but was there a poison pill to get it? Are we going to be paying for it long term, or the opposite?
Let me try to react to a few of those things. I think the comments at the end are really pretty outrageous. But let me say first about job growth and unemployment. I think it's very important to see that job growth pick up and unemployment come down as part of the recovery. It is a normal thing that tends to lag somewhat behind the GDP numbers. It is a weak recovery so far on those grounds. I think that will improve, particularly in the third and fourth quarter, beginning of next year. So I think those things will start to look better pretty soon. Let me say a few things about the tax cuts.
Robert Barrow, hold that thought. We're going to try and work on your line, see if we can improve it from La Paz. We've got you long distance there. George Arkaloff, stand by. We're talking tonight about the road to economic recovery. Economists say we are on it. Where does it go from here? And is it on a firm foundation? Are you feeling good? Are you feeling confident? Do you smell economic recovery? And if the economy is recovering, what brought it on? Natural cycles, Bush policy, both? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the road to economic recovery. Economists say we're on it. So where does it go from here? Is it on a firm foundation? Did you just get a $400 child tax credit check in the mail? What are you going to do with it? Do you like the long-term prospects for the U.S. economy? Are we on the right track here? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight from Berkeley, California, by George Akerlof, 2001 Nobel laureate in economics and professor of economics at UC Berkeley, author of An Economic Theorist's Book of Tales. And on a rough line from La Paz, Bolivia, that we're going to stick with for one more second, Robert Barrow, professor of economics at Harvard and senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. Robert Barrow, you were just about to make your defense of the long-term impact of long-term tax cuts. George Akerlof is highly critical of those. How do you see them?
Well, I don't know how well you can get it, but let me talk about the things that I think are favorable for the economic growth. One in the short term, particularly, is the defense expenditures related to the Afghanistan and Iraq conflicts. Now, I think the main purpose of those was for international security, and that's the main thing. But as a secondary consequence, it does have a positive effect on the economy as measured by things like GDP and employment. So that's one element. The second thing is about interest rates, which are historically at very low levels, but the longer rates, longer-term rates, are really more relevant. And in a sense, the recent pickup in the longer-term rates is actually a positive. It's actually an increase in what's called real interest rates. I think that's actually a symptom that the economy has begun to recover, especially investment.
But what about the fundamental critique that this path puts the United States on an eventual kind of drowning path in red ink, in federal deficits? Does that have you concerned?
Let me talk about that. That's about the tax cuts. Now, there have been two tax cuts. I think the recent one is really much better, the 2003 tax cuts. I think that they aim much more towards incentives for investment, for productivity expansion, indeed for employment. But there are really two aspects of the tax cuts. One is to make the system more efficient, to encourage more investment, employment, and so on. And I think the recent cuts are positive there. The second part of the tax cut is really about what one thinks about the size of the government. And I think the main point of these tax cuts is to say that the government expansion in terms of expenditures is not going to be allowed to occur so much.
So
there
we go.
The way red ink is going to be avoided in the longer term is by not having the federal budget increase so much in terms of expenditure.
So a more efficient system long term and a smaller government long term. Robert Barrow, the line is so rough we're going to have to let you go, but we thank you for joining us tonight. Robert Barrow, professor of economics at Harvard, there on a rough line from La Paz, Bolivia. These economists get around. George Akerlof, you hear the response, that the very boiled down, simple response there to your critique that these tax cuts, yes, they're long term, and bravo, Robert Barrow's essentially saying this is going to give us longer term deep efficiency in the economy and a smaller government, which will be less drag on the economy.
Okay, well, let me give you my most serious concern. My most serious concern is that with all this red ink that the government has actually used up, what's one of its most valuable resources?
That being?
And that most valuable resource is, in fact, its credibility. So if you remember your history, that 200 years ago, in the administration of George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, for the first time, established the credibility of the United States government. And what he did was he paid back at par government debts that people mm-hmm. thought would never be repaid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since that time, it's turned out that one of the chief assets of the United States government has been that people believe that if they loan a dollar to the United States government, that they're going to be paid back.
And why shouldn't they believe that going forward?
Well, because there's red ink as far as the eye can see. And somehow, let me get back to that question.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you what the positive advantages are, and then I'll come back to your question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what that enables us to do, why this is a good asset, is when we've gotten into trouble, like in wars, it's enabled us to borrow money.
Mm-hmm.
When we've gotten into recessions, like now, it's meant that we can spend more than current revenues to stimulate the economy in a recession.
Because people will lend in the confidence, the full confidence that things will be righted and paid back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is that the deficits are so large, as currently projected, that in fact it even is a long-term danger to our fiscal solvency.
But we're so accustomed to red ink. I mean, we've had deficits for a long, long time. Why would the future deficits blow away all those years of credibility?
It's never been deficits of this magnitude. Whenever we've had very large deficits, it's always been in time of something like serious recession, as in the Great Depression, or in wars.
Even in the Reagan years?
The Reagan years were one exception when we had deficits of this size. But then, quickly in the Reagan years, there were two tax bills which raised revenues. And then one of the best things that George Bush Sr. did was, with great courage, he in fact raised tax revenues, which again put us back on a credible fiscal basis. And then, of course, Clinton followed up on that. So there were 12 years of administration where there people at great political cost to themselves, two presidents, raised tax revenues and put us back into solvency.
So when Robert Barrow writes that he's looking forward to further waves of economic expansion, similar to those, he says, following the Kennedy-Johnson tax cut of 1963-64 and the Reagan cuts of the 1980s, that doesn't add up to you this time?
Well, it seems to me that these are very large. Let me just give you some idea as to how large they are.
The current tax cuts, that is.
So let me give you some idea as to how large projected tax how large the projected deficits are.
All right.
Okay. A reasonable forecast, which isn't my own, would be that the 10-year deficit for the years 2004 to 2013 is a full $4.1 trillion. And that deficit includes the Social Security surpluses. If you exclude those from the 10-year deficit, the total deficit for the 10 years is $6.7 trillion.
These numbers are so big it's hard to take them on board. What should we feel when we hear that?
Let me just, before we do that, mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you who they are, because these are by conservative people. So this is a projection by the Center for Policy and Budget Priorities.
All right.
They're similar figures come from Pete Peterson of the Concord Coalition, from Goldman Sachs, mm-hmm. and from the Committee on Economic Development. So these are, in fact, center-of-the-road projections, and they're done by center-of-the-road thinkers. Let me just give you some reasons why they're so how you get these numbers, so that, you know, it's not just me, it's just natural, and this is in the projections. So what these projections do is they take the official CBO, Congressional Budget Office,
right.
projections of revenues,
mm-hmm.
That are under revenues that are currently enacted, and they also adjust for likely changes in both the revenues and the expenditures.
So we'll take your word for it that these are reasonable, but what is the implication of deficits on this scale?
What is the implication of this? Well, I think the major problem is, remember the plumber. The question is, who needs the expense of a plumber permanently living in your house? And so let me indicate what the problems are with having the plumber permanently a house.
The plumber being the drain of
resources that's currently there.
Mm-hmm.
The first problem is that with deficits of this magnitude, we're sure that we're going to have to cut something. So there are three major components to the federal government. The first is interest on the debt itself, and we can't cut that without going into default.
Right.
Okay. The second is military expenditures,
mm-hmm.
and I imagine that we'll have to cut some there. Okay?
Though the world hardly looks promising on that front.
The world doesn't look promising, so it's going to be difficult. And then the third big item in the federal budget is Social Security and Medicare. And so what huge projected deficits mean is that we're going to have to cut Social Security and Medicare.
So when you hear Robert Barrow say what we're headed for is a more efficient system and smaller government, and that will produce economic growth, I mean, could he still be right even in your scenario? Is it possible that we cut these things, but we don't even need them because the economy is so robust that money's pouring off of trees?
But that's highly unlikely. Remember that we get old people, and The problem is that the income of a full 80% of the elderly comes mainly from Social Security. It's not till you get into the very top income bracket that people have significant income that comes from retirement, from their retirement funds, or else from their savings.
George Akerlof, stand by. We've got a very gloomy picture there on the other side of recovery, a more positive picture from Robert Barrow. I want to hear from some people who are in the economy, running businesses, making their own calculations about where things are headed. We're joined right now from Ottumwa, Iowa, by Kendig Neen. He's chief executive of Aljon Incorporated, an 80-person company that manufactures car crushers and other solid waste processing equipment. Good evening and welcome, Kendig Neen.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. Mr. Neen, when you look at the economy right now, how does it look to you? Is it picking up in your business? And when you hear this debate about the long term, as a longtime businessman, how do you assess it?
Well, I guess I would begin first with one of Lincoln's 10 truths when he said you cannot tax yourself into prosperity. And what Bush's administration has attempted to do up until this point in time is create an environment for success. It's pretty simple to say that without growth, there's not going to be any increase in revenues. And it's been a challenge for American manufacturers the last couple of years. We've lost close to 3 million jobs, I think it is, over the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Aljon's kind of a unique company in the fact that we manufacture equipment for both the solid waste and scrap processing markets.
But you depend on a big supply of things being thrown away. That means new things being purchased, I presume.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So how does it look right now? Do you feel the recovery coming? Are there signs in your business?
Yes, we do. It's kind of a complicated story for us, I guess, because the markets our customer deals in is scrap steel and solid waste.
Mm-hmm.
Scrap steel is kind of a commodity that's almost generic around in scope around the world. The market buys a needed material wherever it's most affordable, and if there's not a strong export market, domestic sales suffer. And that occurred last year largely due to the overvalued dollar. The dollar was so strong, in fact, that steel companies were actually importing scrap.
Right.
And today's dollar is virtually eliminated, and I wouldn't say it's a weaker dollar. I think it's returned to normal levels. It's virtually eliminated the importation of scrap, and we're again exporting.
Do you see new orders coming in?
Absolutely, we do.
And do you chalk those up to the Bush tax cut policy and low interest rates, or to a natural cycle that's brought some blush back to the cheek of the economy here?
Well, I think it comes in two forms. The administration's work to get the dollar balance back was certainly critical to that. And the tax cuts that we've seen up until this point have regained some confidence in our markets that allow people to make large expenditures in capital equipment.
Mm-hmm. And when you look out at the longer term that we're also looking at tonight, because the short term leads somewhere, I hear you expressing more confidence in the long-term impact of tax cuts. I hear you buying the view that this can create more growth, more prosperity that pulls the country over that hump. Am I right?
Yes, I would definitely agree with that. We're going down the right direction, but there's more interfering variables out there than just tax cuts. The scrap steel industry is probably its largest concern right now is the ability of American manufacturers to compete because that's the source of their raw material. And in a way, that ties back to the tax cut, but it also goes back to the competitiveness issue. Today, the cost of doing business in this country is simply too high.
Too high compared to your foreign competitors.
Absolutely. We need to continue efforts to make American business more competitive. It's not the $2 a day wages in China. It's the business environment hampered by various state, federal, and even local regulations, along with the high cost of health care, product liability insurance, litigations, and taxes that have made many industries uncompetitive.
So do you think, as both a businessman and a citizen, that you'd like to sort of cut away all that stuff, you'd be then more competitive internationally, but would it be a comfortable, a good society to live in? Would it have decent wages, decent health care? Do all these things add up, Mr. Neen?
I'm not naive enough to sit here and say that we need to throw away a lot of the things that make the quality of life in this country great. But I will say that we have to find a method by which we can make countries like China, who has an inability to comply with the WTO rules, they have patent infringement problems, the implementation of their own VAT and their currency manipulation has caused a lot of the issues that we're facing today. It's not that I want to drag us down in environmental and regulatory and tax issues as much as it is I want to have an even playing field with other countries. The recent passing of Trade Promotion Authority for the president will hopefully accomplish some of that.
Kenny Kneen, Chief Executive of Aljon, Inc. in Ottumwa, Iowa, thanks very much for joining us tonight. We hear your optimism there and your faith in the Bush approach. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Certainly.
Arda is calling from Hillsboro, Wisconsin. Hi, Arda. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. Good evening.
I wanted to tell you that I agree and I disagree.
On the recovery front, is there a recovery in your personal finances, Arda?
Well, let me put it this way. Yes and no. And the reason for that is my husband and I own a farm.
Okay.
The farm economy is not very good now. In fact, we made more on milk 30 years ago than we do now per hundredweight.
And this is despite the price supports and all the rest?
Despite the price supports and all the rest.
So how can you possibly feel recovery in that case?
Okay. I'm also part owner, through my family, of a small construction and construction supply company.
So interest rates have been low, and that must have been good for you.
Oh, my, yes. Of course, they also have upped our rates on health insurance and property and casualty insurance to the point where we spend approximately 70% of our gross income a year on those two things.
That's impressive overhead. And your level of faith looking forward at the next year, and then what about the longer term, Arda?
Well, I hate to couch it this way, but if I thought that Mr. Bush was going to be president for another 4 years, my outlook would not be optimistic.
Because?
Generally speaking, I don't believe that Republicans have been very kind to us.
And you own a construction business? I mean, that would seem to be the kind of a natural Republican voter.
Well, I have never been a Republican voter. I will have to say that I vote for the man and not the party. And on a county level, I have always voted Republican. But on a national level, I have never voted Republican. And I can tell you that my husband voted for Ronald Reagan in his first term. And he has never voted again, and he will never vote again. He said it was the biggest mistake of his life.
Well, there's a family riding the fence between farming, which is not doing well, and construction, which has,
yeah.
and looking forward and saying, maybe you'd like a change. Arda, thanks very much for calling. George Akerlof, stand by. We want to come back and get your sense of what we're hearing out there. We're talking tonight about the road to economic recovery with 2001 Nobel laureate in economics, George Akerlof, professor of economics at the University of California, Berkeley. You can join this conversation as well. Were tax cuts the right medicine? Will they be the right medicine down the road? Will federal deficits come back to bite this economy, to bite the economy of our kids, of our retirement years? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Support for this book. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the road to economic recovery. Economists of all stripes now say we are on it. Do you feel it? Where does it go from here? And is it on a firm foundation? We're at 1-800-423-8255. My guest tonight, George Akerlof, 2001 Nobel laureate in economics and a significant critic of Bush economic policy. He called the Bush fiscal policy, he said, is the worst policy in the last 200 years. You can't get a much bigger critique than that. We heard earlier from Robert Barrow of Harvard saying, no, it's got us on the right track generally, and it will work out. What a canyon between those two. George Akerlof, we just heard from a couple of Americans in the Midwest there. One CEO of a company saying he feels beleaguered by foreign competition and he wants to cut away taxes and any other undergrowth he can that make him more competitive. Your thoughts?
Well, of course, we'd all like to pay less taxes, but the unfortunate thing is that if the government's going to spend money, and there are all kinds of ways in which the government unfortunately has to spend money, somebody's going to have to pay the taxes. Somebody's going to have to pay those taxes at some period of time. What we're doing at the moment is we're currently on a binge. The reason we're on a binge is that we currently have huge deficits which are projected to last as far as the eye can see. And there is no time at which we think these deficits are going to decrease. And the problem is we have a lot of people coming up who are going to retire. And what have these people, what have the people been promised? They've been implicitly promised that they're going to get Social Security and Medicare as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
And the trouble is there just simply are not going to be enough people earning enough income to pay the money that we're going to owe those people.
So even if we're heading into a recovery here, you, the Nobel Prize winner, are going to be biting your nails as we look ahead. George Akerlof, please stand by for just a moment. I want to welcome into our conversation Kent Conine. He joins us from Dallas, Texas. Kent is president of the National Association of Home Builders. He's an owner of Conine Residential Group. It's a 10-person real estate development and management company. Good evening and welcome, Kent Conine.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Very well. Thanks for joining us. Low interest rates must have been great for home building. What do you think of the recovery now?
Well, don't put that in a past tense scenario. I think we still have remarkably low interest rates today by historical standards, at least of the last 20 years. And thankfully, the home buying public is still actively pursuing new home purchases right now.
We heard from you earlier, I think. You were saying that many builders are downright giddy at how good business has been. How good has it been for your business, Kent Conine?
Oh, it's been a remarkable year so far. We're definitely in a growth mode here in the markets that we particularly serve on the single family side, and we expect with the tax cuts that have hit the marketplace that, and of course, if interest rates hold fairly stable to where they are right now, the demographics for housing is just going to be incredible. We've got the echo boomers getting ready to enter their first stages of the housing market here shortly. And as you know, the echo boom is bigger than the baby boom. So over the next 10 or 12 years, we're looking at pretty good demographics.
So the demand for housing is likely to be high if pushed by demographics. And it sounds as though it's been good for you, and you see more good times ahead in this recovery, if indeed it's coming up here. What about this longer-term critique that George Akerlof, our guest in California, is making tonight? He's a Nobel Prize winner. He's looking out at massive deficits and saying, this just doesn't add up. This is a recipe for disaster. You've got young home builders coming up behind you who would like to plan long careers, Kent Conine. Do you fear for their careers, given the large deficits now projected?
No, I do not. I think that once the consumer's been doing their part in spending the dollars that they have available, and now it's time for businesses to do their part and do some growth and capital expansion. They've been sitting on hold over the last several years, you know, with the scandals on Wall Street and the inability to raise capital through either IPOs or additional offerings. And I think that's getting behind us now, and some confidence is rebuilding in the business sectors to enable them to expand plant and equipment and, of course, increase the jobs. Job growth and household formations are what the housing industry bank off of, and we believe we see more of that coming.
But long term, if there is, with this enormous deficit, presumably at some point that puts pressure on interest rates. If they go up, it makes it harder for people to buy homes.
Well, I'm a believer in dynamic scoring, which we don't get a lot of, and especially in government accounting. So, you know, if you look at the last big round of tax cuts we had in the early 80s, we had huge revenues to the Federal Treasury, revenue growth over that period of time. And if you can control spending to a certain level, then history will repeat itself. We'll catch up with the deficits. We'll be able to get back into surpluses and be able to meet the needs of our nation.
Kent Conine, thanks for checking in from Dallas and for the report on the housing front. Thanks very much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome.
George Akerlof, there it is again.
Okay.
You know,
well,
we got the businessman who's counting on dynamic scoring. We're going to grow our way out of this, whatever it may be.
Well, people have looked at that. The administration has asked the Congressional Budget Office to look at what the deficits look like with dynamic scoring, and the Congressional Budget Office has accordingly done it, precisely the way the administration wanted. And what were the results? The results were the dynamic scoring had no different effects. And what were the reasons for it? the reasons why dynamic scoring resulted in no additional growth. In fact, it resulted in less growth and in higher deficits.
And dynamic scoring, I guess, being a shorthand for, look, everything's in play here. Everything can grow.
That's right. So taking into account the effects of the taxes on growth, and they found out that, in fact, in almost every case that it, in fact, resulted in higher deficits. And the reason was that the deficits, as you said, tend to increase interest rates from what they'd otherwise be, and that slowed growth. So the net effect of the tax cuts that we've had, where, in fact, is to decrease growth, not to increase it.
It must be some experience for a super high-tier economist like yourself to look out on these numbers and then to hear the voices of Americans. Here's the president of the National Association of Home Builders, and he's simply, his view is we will grow our way out of this. We'll catch up with the deficits. You know, your numbers be damned in a
sense. They're not my numbers.
Well, these are the numbers.
These are the official numbers of the Congressional Budget Office, taken, in fact, by somebody who is loyal to the administration. So that these are not my numbers. That's what I'm saying.
Fair enough. We got it. But still, this confidence sits there.
Well, let me just continue.
Yeah.
That what I'm saying all along is you take the most conservative people, the people who do the best calculations for what they think the government deficits are going to be, and each and every one of them, each and every one of them finds that these numbers are out of sight.
What?
Out of sight. Let me give you what out of sight means. Out of sight means that in this decade, before the baby boomers retire, we're going to have a $4 trillion deficit. And then in the next decade after that, we have projected the same types of deficits. But then in addition, we have to pay for the baby boomers. The point is that this government has put us on a trajectory where something bad has got to happen. I can't tell you what bad is going to happen, but we know that it is. Let me give you a few things that those might be. We're going to have to cut Social Security and Medicare drastically. We're going to have to cut all other parts of the government drastically. These include things that we want and that we need and want. These include aid to science, aid to education. It includes the national parks. That's one scenario. Yep. Another scenario is that we don't have the political will to do this. If we don't have the political will to do this, then something yet worse is going to happen. That's the type of thing that happened in Argentina.
You mean a real meltdown?
I don't think we're going to actually get into that worse situation, but I think we're going to have to pay the other costs. Mm.
George Akerlof, you've got a monsoon's worth of rain to dump on the recovery right in front of us, looking out at the longer term. Stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Lawrence Kotlikoff. He's chairman of the economics department at Boston University. Good evening, and welcome, Lawrence Kotlikoff.
Hi, Tom. Hi, George.
Hi, Larry.
Thank you so much for joining us. Here we are tonight looking at this recovery and then looking on down the road a bit and wondering, as ordinary citizens, at least on my part, and how good or bad or middling should we feel about all this? We've heard voices tonight from folks in the economy, some expressing concern, others expressing real confidence that one way or another, despite the numbers that George Akerlof is pointing to, we'll grow our way out of this. Yet Professor Akerlof, and he's the Nobel Prize winner here, says, look, this is a doom scenario. How do you see it, Professor Kotlikoff?
Well, when I listen to George, it sounds like I'm listening to myself talking. The reality is that we've got 77 million baby boomers, and they're all supposed to get these benefits, and that even if the economy grows more rapidly, these benefits are linked to growth, so they seem to rise just as fast as the economy grows. So those 77 billion, million baby boomers aren't going to go away, and George is absolutely right. When you look at the implications of that, it's extremely scary. Now, one thing that we need to be fair about here is that this is not all due to the Bush administration. The Clinton administration, the prior Bush administration, the Reagan administration, all these administrations have ducked the problem of dealing with Social Security and Medicare expenditures over the long term. They haven't gotten these programs under control.
But there were surpluses being reported and projected a couple of years ago.
But these official surpluses and deficits are basically a sideshow. The real liabilities here are not showing up in the explicit explicit debt numbers. They're really these implicit liabilities, these obligations to have to pay future Social Security and Medicare benefits. Under the Clinton administration, in the first 4 years, Medicare benefits per beneficiary grew by 25%. That was a big bonus to all 77 million baby boomers when they retire, because their benefits are going to be 25% higher. So
and pushing that out,
wasn't watching the shop, and because it wasn't doing proper accounting.
But let me ask you about this, if I may. Our time is running short. Robert Barrow from Harvard said earlier, essentially, that despite all that, there's a kind of fundamental structural strength to the Bush fiscal strategy here that leads to more efficiency, that leads to smaller government, that will lead to a more robust economy. Can you see that or not, Lawrence Kotlikoff?
No, I think that, you know, cutting the dividend taxes, had we raised some other taxes and had a structural tax change as opposed to just a tax cut, there would be some logic to that. But what we really have is a bankruptcy situation, if you really look at it.
Who's bankruptcy?
The country is bankrupt in what we call present value. If you look at all the bills coming due and all the receipts we're going to have to pay for those, right now, here as we speak, this country is bankrupt. I mean, we'd have to close it down if we were a business. And, you know, what George is saying is that we're going to have to print money like crazy to try and inflate our way out of this. It's going to be a disastrous scenario. So he's quite right. He didn't get a Nobel Prize for nothing.
George Akerlof, this is taking some of the joy out of the recovery talk, though we're still happy to have a recovery. Do you have a solution up your sleeve?
Well, I think there is a pretty easy solution. The pretty easy solution is to, as Larry says, these are long-term problems, mm-hmm. and they still have to be dealt with. But a beginning to a solution is to repeal some of the future tax cuts that have been promised, so that what we deal with is this temporary problem of the temporary recession with a temporary tax cut. That's the way to deal with it, rather than to have permanent tax cuts and red ink as far as the eye can see. It seems to me we're going to have to deal with it by a series of measures that are going to be very painful. Actually, we've seen that occur before, because we saw George Bush Sr.
who took the hit and raised the taxes,
And then we saw Clinton raise taxes again. And as Larry said, the Social Security and Medicare problem wasn't solved at that point, but at least the outlook was better.
Lawrence Kotlikoff, we've just got a few seconds left. Can a real economic recovery get going if the long-term prospects are as gloomy as George Akerlof is describing tonight?
Well, we have so many people who are short-sighted in this country that, just like in Argentina, the economy was kicking along just fine until somebody in the bond market woke up to what Argentina's fiscal situation was, and the next day there was a run on the banks.
Well, you guys are both sending me into this recovery with a real chill up the spine, but we thank you for your time tonight. George Akerlof at UC Berkeley, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Nobel Prize winner 2001, Professor George Akerlof, and Lawrence Kotlikoff, Chairman of the Economics Department at Boston University, thanks for being here as well.
My pleasure.
You can continue this conversation online, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for this program comes from Sophos Antivirus, protecting corporate IT networks.